Hello, and welcome to Senior Living, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Chrissy Mernon. During this next half hour, I'm reading articles from AARP, the magazine. And the first one is Upfront, the A-List, five things Jay Leno says to do right now. Number one, go to war. Dr. Fauci says we have to fight COVID-19 like a war. And a reporter asked, how do we do that? Fauci says, by staying home and watching television. And I thought to myself, I have been training for this war my entire life. Number two, help out. I have a 3D printer, and my wife Mavis and I are making masks, turning out about 100 per week. We give them to local firefighters and police. Three, make them grin. My parents had a 1949 Plymouth, so I thought, that's what I should drive now. At the market, there was a line of glum-looking people 6 feet apart. All of a sudden, my green 50s wagon with wide white wall tires pulls in. A guy yells out, my mom had one of those, and they all start smiling. Four, eat comfort food. Look at our support staff, Chef Boyardee, Ben and Jerry, Colonel Sanders. I'm on the same terrible diet I've always been on. Five, visit Jay's Garage. Jay Leno's Garage is about people and their cars. I ask, what was your first car? What did it mean to you? Martha Stewart owns Edsel Ford's old house in Maine, so she drives a 58 Edsel station wagon. Speaking of isolation, she's tough and funny. When she went to prison, I made her a Shiv cozy in a Laura Ashley print as a gift. We made a big fuss over Adam West, TV's Batman, when he came on the show shortly before he passed away. This season has included Billy Joel, we did some singing in the car, and Craig Ferguson, with Jay Leno above in a picture. A fun part of doing the show is the connections I make. This is not the kind of emergency where you drive around in a Lamborghini like some deposed dictator and his idiot son. That's what Jay Leno says. Jay Leno is 70 years old. The next article from AARP, the magazine, is Upfront Live, your next do-it-yourself home project. We ask several do-it-yourself superstars what tasks they've taken on since being quarantined. If they can do these, so can you. Here are a few possibilities worth considering. Bob Vila, the biggest project, relocating my workbench to a sunnier part of the garage with lots of reorganizing. Taking on delayed projects, oiling the gate hinges and cleaning windows, my least favorite chore. Hillary Farr, love it or list it. Taking on delayed projects, my closet, coats, shoes, and bags are now lean and mean. My linen closet is now labeled Queen, King, Twin. Woohoo. Ty Pennington, Extreme Makeover Home Edition Reboot. Biggest projects, salvaging storm-damaged trees and creating bedside tables from the trunks. And since we may need to be more self-reliant, I started my garden. Taking on a delayed project, I've been in the gutter, and by that I mean I've been cleaning and repairing mine. Ben and Aaron Napier from HGTV's Hometown. Biggest project, cleaning out our garage over 4 days. We gave away tires, building materials, and an upright air conditioner unit. We checked and disposed of our organized paint cans. We put all nuts, bolts, and screws into labeled coffee cans. Drew Scott of Property Brothers, taking on a delayed project. Linda and I have finally been able to build our garden. Setting up the pots takes the most time, but in a few weeks we'll be able to taste the fruits of our labor, or should I say, the veggies of our labor. Jonathan Scott of Property Brothers, biggest project, setting up a home office space so I'm not hunched over a laptop on my couch. The next article from AARP magazine, Upfront Live, Goodwill Hunting. An author's investigation found that much of what we donate to thrift stores fuels a global market in secondhand goods. Adam Minter. Like so many people in the United States, my sister and I, after my mother passed away, were left with a second period of mourning, author Adam Minter says, of dispensing from his mom's house a lifetime of family possessions. Intrigued by what would happen to all that he donated to a Goodwill store in Hopkins, Minnesota, he began a quest that culminated in his new book, Secondhand Travels in the New Global Garage Sale. Question, What do thrift stores do with the items, two-thirds of donations, that don't sell? A lot of the apparel will go into the export markets. There is a strong demand for American secondhand apparel. People wrongly think that Goodwill is in a rush to toss stuff into a landfill or incinerator. They have every financial incentive to find somebody to pay for your stuff. How should we be donating used possessions? What shocked me was the amount of donations of literal garbage, broken toys, torn up clothes. If it's something that you can't imagine your friends or family reusing, it doesn't belong at Goodwill. But many items do get a second life. Sure, yes, I don't want to tell people not to give to Goodwill. The proceeds from what they sell fund job training programs for kids who haven't worked before. Goodwill is doing important work that others aren't. The next article from AARP, the magazine. Up front, listen. Can't go to a show? Instead, watch these classic concerts handpicked by famous musicians as their favorite live music movies. Enjoy them from your couch. Number one, TAMI Show DVD, picked by Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top. James Brown delivered his killer show. Seeing the Rolling Stones at the very beginning was a revelation. And Chuck Berry, the Beach Boys, the Supremes, all gave it their absolute best. Number two, Elvis, Aloha from Hawaii, picked by Tanya Tucker. Elvis always inspired me as a fan and an artist. That particular concert was a few years after his 68 comeback special and resonated with even more people worldwide. Three, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars on iTunes, picked by Joe Elliott of Def Leppard. Quality-wise, this film is tragic, but it's the last ever Spiders from Mars gig. From that viewpoint, it's worth $1 million. Four, Earth, Wind, and Fire, EWF Live in Japan 1990 DVD, picked by Nathan East of the jazz group 4Play. He also played bass for Eric Clapton and Ringo Starr. It's brilliant the way EWF combines jazz, R&B, blues, and rock to create such pop. Their music resonates with souls around the globe. Five, The Concert for Bangladesh, DVD, picked by Kathy Valentine of the Go-Go's. This benefit, billed as George Harrison and Friends, including Bob Dylan, Ringo Starr, and Billy Preston, is a concert permeated with a spirituality I'd never quite encountered in rock and roll before. Six, Woodstock, Amazon Prime Video, DVD, picked by Amy Ray of the folk group Indigo Girls. It turned me on to Richie Havens, Jimi Hendrix, Jefferson Airplane, CSNY, and Joan Baez. More important, it turned me on to the ideas of liberation and peace. Remembering great songs. Music has the power to harness cherished moments that we never want to lose, says Anthony Hamilton, among 10 artists on Music Moments, an album from the Alzheimer's Association. Hamilton offers Stand By Me. Sting covers Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. It reminds him of his youth. The next article from AARP, the magazine, up front, watch. Fast Entertainment, what to watch in 30 minutes or less. If you are not willing to commit to binge-watching long-form episodic dramas such as Game of Thrones, totaling 70 hours, the new short-form series with 7 to 30-minute episodes may be for you. They include Sundance Now's Emmy-winning State of the Union, 10-minute episodes featuring a couple, Chris O'Dowd and Rosamund Pike, wittily arguing about their bad marriage. Her affair is his fault? The big news in this latest type of TV is Quibi, short for Quick Bites, the new streaming service for smartphones from ex-Disney executive Jeffrey Katzenberg and former eBay CEO Meg Whitman. Among its 50 shows with episodes of 10 minutes or less are Thanks a Million, where Jennifer Lopez, 50, and other celebs give unsuspecting people $100,000 each, and Flipped, with Will Forte, 50, as a house flipper kidnapped by gangsters, Andy Garcia, 63, and Eva Longoria, 45, and forced to renovate their home. Here are more shorties to stream now on phones and from services besides Quibi. Other devices. Dramatic. Quibi's Free Ray Sean is the tale of a kind cop, Lawrence Fishburne, 58, who tries to talk a suspect, Stephen James, into surrendering during a standoff. Soapy. The Bay. Amazon's glossy, Emmy-winning melodrama about rich and devious folks stars Mary Beth Evans, 59, Jacqueline Zeman, 67, and Tristan Rogers, 73. Sketchy. Netflix, I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, offers lots of grown-up guest hams, such as the late Fred Willard of Modern Family, as the world's worst and cheeriest church funeral organist. Anthology. In Amazon's Modern Love, based on the New York Times column, actors including Anne Hathaway, Judd Hirsch, 85, and Jane Alexander, 80, reenact poignant, fact-inspired tales of real couples in contained half hours. Gloria Steinem conquers Hollywood. The feminist icon is celebrated in film and on TV this year. Hollywood has a new star, Gloria Steinem, 86, who launched Ms. Magazine 48 years ago. Six actresses will portray her on screen this year. Julianne Moore, Alicia Vikander, Lulu Wilson, and Ryan Kiera Armstrong in the film The Glorias, Rose Byrne in Hulu's series Mrs. America, and Christine Lottie, 70, in Gloria, A Life on PBS. Lottie, an ERA Coalition Advisory Council member who got her first Oscar nod for her role in 1984's feminist World War II drama Swing Shift, is a Steinem pal. One reason we're such close friends is that we both felt we were living the unlived lives of our mothers, says Lottie, who depicted a surgeon, her father's profession, on TV's Chicago Hope. While developing Gloria, Lottie discovered painful new details about her friend's life. We were determined to show the underbelly of this icon, I said. Gloria, tell me more about the worst things you did to your mother. I'm cutting too close to the bone. Tell me, she said. Look, if it's not honest, it won't be helpful. Kevin Costner's Long Ride Forward, TV's Yellowstone, is a ratings hit. He galloped into fame as a gunslinger in Silverado at age 30. By 35, his Civil War-era Western, Dances with Wolves, won an Oscar for Best Picture. Now 65, Kevin Costner is back in the West, starring as America's biggest rancher, John Dutton, on season 3 of Paramount Network's Yellowstone, a saga about the Dutton clan's fight for survival. Yellowstone started as 2018's most watched new cable show. Ever since, ratings have soared. Costner isn't keen to hang up his acting spurs soon. I like being a storyteller. It's not a job where you're looking to retire, he says. I feel that some of my great surprises are in front of me. I've been doing a lot of writing. There are projects I still want to do. West Side Story gets an update. Rita Moreno returns, and the new Spielberg movie brings fresh style and energy to the classic tale. West Side Story never gets old. An innovatingly reimagined version of the 1957 musical was Broadway's number 2 hit after Hamilton this past March. And Steven Spielberg, 73, is making a $100 million film version co-starring Rita Moreno, 88, who won an Oscar for her performance as shark girlfriend Anita in the original 1961 movie. Why does this musical tragedy about bloody gang warfare and fervent young attraction still resonate today? Partly, it's the timeless power of the story of forbidden love. The musical was based in large part on William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Plus, of course, there are the lyrics and score by Stephen Sondheim, 90, and the late Leonard Bernstein, respectively. It's of its time and about its time, 1957, but its beauty and passion speak powerfully to successive generations, says Pulitzer Prize-winning dramatist Tony Kushner, 63, who wrote Spielberg's West Side Story. It doesn't age, it doesn't get dated. The Spielberg firm, currently slated for release at the end of this year, has another time-defying advantage. Moreno, In the remake, she plays Valentina, a female version of Doc, who owns the store where the hero, Tony, Baby Driver's Ansel Elgort, works. She's made Valentina a blazing torch of a human being, small, quiet, smart, witty, ferociously loving, immensely strong, heartbroken, and hopeful. In some ways, she is the true moral center of Stephen's film, Kushner notes. Perry Mason is back on the case. Matthew Reese and John Lithgow star in HBO's Update. TV has a new Perry Mason, and he's nothing like the old one played by Raymond Burr. Today's Mason is a troubled World War I veteran trying to find himself in topsy-turvy 1932 Los Angeles. He's not this perfect lawyer, says Matthew Reese of The Americans, 45, who portrays him in HBO's Perry Mason, a feast for grown-up history fans premiering on June 21st. He's mired by great flaws, but he has this striving for justice. Reese Mason is a shady private detective learning the ropes from his lawyer boss, played by John Lithgow. They have a taunting friendship, Lithgow, 74 notes. Bit by bit, you see Perry Mason outgrowing his mentor and deciding, wait a minute, I can do this a lot better. The next article from AARP, the magazine. Cover story, Alan Alda is obsessed with the power of science. Some 40 years after MASH ended, the beloved actor and advocate remains passionate about laughter, respect, and the facts. This is by David Hochman. Alan Alda isn't letting social distancing keep him from the people he loves. Soon after Alda, 84, and Arlene, 87, his wife of 63 years, quarantined themselves at their home on Long Island, they began holding video chats with friends and family via Zoom, the popular video conferencing app. The other night we had dinner virtually with three couples, says Alda, who's using Zoom's virtual background feature, put up a gorgeous travel video of Italy during cocktails. I'm a little bit ahead of most of my friends digitally. For years, I've been fixing their computers, and I call my service Celebrity Tech Support. The slogan is, why let a nobody touch your stuff? Alda lands the joke with that winning ear-to-ear smile. I can tell you because we're Zooming, too. His presence is reassuring on my laptop screen as it was all those years ago on the beloved TV war comedy MASH. His iconic surgeon character, Benjamin Franklin Hawkeye Pierce, brought intelligence, wit, and sanity to a world of chaos, much as Alda himself is doing now. In the nearly four decades since MASH signed off with what remains the most watched episode in television history, the six-time Emmy recipient has focused on something way broader than show business. He wants us all to relate and communicate better. His podcast, Clear Plus Vivid with Alan Alda, which launched in 2018 and features such megawatt guests as Tom Hanks and Paul McCartney, hinges on communication. It's just two people really listening to each other for 45 minutes, Alda says. If one subject stands out in these heart-to-hearts, it's science. For 11 years, Alda, who describes himself as a walking question mark, was the engaging host of Scientific American Frontiers, a PBS show in which he got brainy engineers, medical researchers, and Nobel laureates to talk more like the rest of us. He turned the gig into a full-time mission. In 2009, he established the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University on Long Island, where he loosens up scientists using improvisational techniques he learned during 50 years of acting. Some 15,000 participants have come through Alda communication training so they can better share their critical work with clarity and passion. People are dying because we can't communicate in ways that allow us to understand one another, Alda explained in his 2017 book, If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? That sounds like an exaggeration, but I don't think it is. When patients can't relate to their doctors and don't follow their orders, when engineers can't convince a town that the dam could break, when a parent can't win the trust of a child to warn her off a lethal drug, they can all be headed for a serious ending. Communicating science matters more than ever to Alda these days. Not only is he in the age group most at risk for COVID-19, he's also battling Parkinson's disease, another illness with no cure. Alda doesn't let that get him down. If anything, he finds inspiration in mysteries yet to be unraveled. We don't value our ignorance enough, he notes in a candid, wide-ranging, and frequently hilarious conversation. Ignorance is really good to have if it's combined with curiosity, and scientists are professional curiosity machines. We should all imitate that as much as possible. Now it's clear that our lives depend on it. What has life been like for you since the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic? I'm having a good time under the circumstances. The other day, we were walking 6 feet apart with friends in a secluded area, and I said, "What's the best thing that's happened since this began?" One friend looked at me with a kind of stupefied expression like, "What do you mean best? What's good?" But I found a lot of positive things. I'm very happy about some of the changes we've had to go through. For one thing, my wife, Arlene, the author of 19 books, is looking for ways to be creative during this time. So she's gone back to painting and drawing, and she plays the piano every day, and she's experimenting with cooking. She looks into a sometimes empty refrigerator and comes up with a delicious meal. I haven't eaten this well since the last epidemic. You've been advocating for years for better communication around science. Are we finally getting the message as a society? One of the most basic things I've tried to do is give people a greater understanding of how science works, the importance of evidence, the importance of many trials, of rigorous studies, and the idea that we learn only a little bit at a time. No single study is the end-all answer for everything. Making people aware of that process helps increase appreciation and respect for science, and that helps us make informed decisions for our families and ourselves. Unfortunately, I probably need another 25 years to help the culture achieve trust in science overall, because there are pockets of people who think science is just another opinion. That mindset puts us all in danger because it can infect people across the country. So I'm very concerned about the casual attitude many people have toward science. There are bright spots. I think infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci is doing a wonderful job. He's straddling two worlds, science and belief. It's like that silent movie shot where someone's balanced on top of two moving trucks that are getting farther and farther apart. His legs are spreading as far as they can, but Fauci, who was on my podcast in March, comes closest to being the national figure most trusted by the rest of the country. With information changing so quickly, it's hard to know what to believe. Well, you have to check the source. There's a lot of fake information out there. Gargle with this. Hold your breath for 10 seconds. If the only source is my cousin who knows somebody in the healthcare field, that's not a reliable source and can do more harm than good. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention or the World Health Organization, those are the best sources, and you've got to go straight to their websites to see what they have to say. I also cross-check information at fact-checking website Snopes.com as often as I can. But beyond that, in a fundamental way, there's a problem we have now that we haven't had before, which is that we're operating within our own circles of kinship and friendship and information. Any advice on getting out of our own little bubbles? The scientists I've interviewed tell me it's a good idea to spread the information you know to be correct with those outside your circle. If there's anybody you know whom you don't ordinarily communicate with and who has his or her own circle, try to include that person so we can extend our reach with real information and also with encouragement. Mental health is as important as physical health. They're intertwined. I'm talking like I'm an expert, but I've only been studying this for 25 years. You survived polio as a kid. What do you remember about that epidemic? I got it when I was 7. I had a stuffy nose at the Warner's movie theater, honking the whole evening. I couldn't clear my nose. When I got home, I threw up and my legs were unsteady. The next day, I had a stiff neck. I couldn't sit up in bed. My parents called the doctor, went to the hospital, had a spinal tap. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, but then I had about 6 months of a therapy devised by Elizabeth Kenny, the famous nurse from Australia. I had nearly scalding blankets wrapped around my limbs every hour. It was hard on me. It was harder, I think, on my parents, who couldn't afford a nurse and had to torture me themselves. It's always better to pay somebody to torture your kid. It doesn't appear that Parkinson's disease has slowed you down much, if at all. How did you first discover you had it? In 2015, I read an article in the New York Times by Jane Brody in which a couple of doctors said some of their Parkinson's patients had one particular early symptom, and it's an unusual one. People act out their dreams while they're asleep. I realized I had done just that. I had dreamed somebody was attacking me, and in the dream, I threw a sack of potatoes at him. In reality, I threw a pillow at my wife. So believing there was a good chance I had Parkinson's, I went to a neurologist and asked for a brain scan. He examined me and said, "I don't think you need a scan. You don't have any symptoms." I said, "Well, I'd really like the scan anyway." And he called me back and said, "Boy, you really got it." Wow. How did you react? I began to exercise. A lot of people hear they have Parkinson's and get depressed and panicky and don't do anything, just hoping it'll go away. It's not going to, but you can hold off the worst symptoms. Movement helps. Walking, biking, treadmills, but also specific things. I move to music a lot. I take boxing lessons from a guy trained in Parkinson's therapy. I do a full workout specifically designed for this disease. It's not the end of the world when you get this diagnosis. You've incorporated Parkinson's into roles in the film Marriage Story and on TV's Ray Donovan. That character's tremor was more advanced than yours, right? Whenever they did close-ups of my hand, I was supposed to be shaking a bit, so I had to fake it. My hand didn't shake that much. Now I could give them a good shake. It's been almost 40 years since MASH ended. Do you think a carousing womanizer like Hawkeye Pierce could survive on TV in today's Me Too era? Even in that era, I was, as you probably know, a very outspoken feminist, and I wasn't just talking about it. I was trying in every way to work from that point of view in my life. We had many discussions on MASH, even before we started shooting, to help shift the version of the character from the male schoolboy approach. I was able to win a lot of those discussions, but some I didn't, and I'm very sorry that I didn't. That character was a product of the time and accepted by the culture, especially by men, not so much by women. Thank goodness it's hard to make a case now for that kind of insulting behavior. It's not acceptable ipso facto, and that's progress. You and Arlene got married 63 years ago. What's your secret? Arlene's answer is that the secret to a long marriage is a short memory. My answer, love. Even when you're yelling at the person, and there will be yelling, keep in mind that this is the person you love more than anything. That changes your tone. So you don't say, "I hate you." You say, Alda starts singing, "I hate you, you, you." You have 3 children and 7 grandkids. Are you optimistic about their future? With the world changing so rapidly, there's no point in being optimistic or pessimistic about anything. You've just got to surf uncertainty because it's all we get. A question I ask around the dinner table with friends is, how long do you think our species will last? Scientists tell me the average species, when you factor in dinosaurs and fruit flies and everything, last about 2 million years. So my question is, do you think we'll be lucky enough to be average? If we're not careful, we can kill each other off. And if we're not smart enough to take care of what nature has in store for us, who knows how long we'll last? So what's the best thing for humans to do? Laugh. Laughter is good. That's one of the greatest benefits of this isolation. My wife and I are laughing more than we ever have. When you laugh, you're vulnerable. You're opening yourself up. You're not protected. That's why a lot of executives don't laugh much, because they think it gives up their strength. But you gain so much through vulnerability. You let the other person in, and that brings us all closer. We can't take ourselves too seriously, even now. A good friend emailed recently and said, "Alan, how are you doing? How's everything?" I wrote back and said, "I'm still alive. If that changes, I'll let you know." Thank you for listening to Senior Living. This program will be replayed this evening starting at 9. If you have questions or comments, please call us at 210 829-4223. I'm Chrissy Mernon saying goodbye from Al Radio.